to rain today.
Tom O'Dell with his version of I Think It's Gonna Rain Today. It's 8:13. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show. I'm Heidi Holton with John Bauer. We have a book that we're going to be talking about now. The title is The Dark Eclipse, Reflections on Suicide and Absence by A.W. Barnes. It's a book of personal essays where the author seeks to come to terms with the suicide of his older brother, Mike. And he's using sources like the police report, autopsy, suicide note, and death certificate to explore his relationship with Mike and their status as gay brothers raised in a large conservative family in the Midwest. A.W. Barnes joins us now. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I think we could start by hearing about your family and your upbringing.
Well, my family is a large family. There are 8 children born within 12 years. There are 7 boys and 1 girl in my family. So it was a lot of boys, a lot of men, a very sort of masculine family, as it were. They're very conservative. They're conservative Catholics. My father was studying to be a Trappist monk, and I like to say that he may have left the monastery, but he did not leave monasticism. Hmm. And thus, I grew up in a very sort of strict family that valued really people, boys that, and girls too, who married, had children, and lived the life my father expected. And my brother Mike and I lived outside of that norm that he created, and thus we were kind of outsiders for most of our childhood, and that affected both of us.
You know, it's interesting, you know, to hear you say we were both outsiders, because I think hearing that sentence, we'd naturally assume then you were so close with your brother, but it was pretty complicated too, wasn't it?
Yeah, I wasn't close with my brother Mike. My relationship with Mike was like my relationship with my other brother. That is, difficult and distant. Simply because we were gay didn't mean that we automatically had this bond. Especially as kids, obviously, we didn't know that we were gay. But even when we were young adults in our 20s, when we had come out to each other, it didn't automatically mean that we were close. We still had a very fraught relationship.
Why was that?
We grew up in Indianapolis.
No, I mean, why was the relationship so troubling, why at such a young age?
And maybe the answer is Indianapolis.
I thought that was a joke. I thought, okay.
Well, I have to say, that's not far from the truth. In Indiana, it's strange that the children, I've heard many times metaphorically, are planted in the cornfield. They're not expected to move.
Yeah.
And I have to say that my entire family, even my extended family, I have 19 nieces and nephews now, they all live in Indianapolis. None of them have moved. So there is this kind of clannish mentality about it. But back to your point, why that is, I think that is because In a larger sense, and I've done a lot of work on this in my intellectual career, men have a difficult time relating to other men. Doesn't matter if they're fathers and sons, or brothers, or buddies. I've found in my studies that we have a difficult time making those relationships, and for my family that was true, and for my brothers, that it was true and remains to be true.
Was it a competitive thing?
No, you know, it's interesting. The way we showed affection in my family was violently. We punched each other. We wrestled. We smacked each other. That was the way we showed love. Hmm. Strangely enough, but we didn't. We weren't sort of people who hugged. We weren't a family who said, I loved you. We weren't that kind of family. We were very athletic. We were a very aggressive family and still are.
We're talking with A.W. Barnes about his new book of essays that's out. It's called The Dark Eclipse, Reflections on Suicide and Absence. Let's talk about the form in which you write these essays. I found it really fascinating why going to kind of source material would kind of bring you closer to what happened with Mike. Tell us about the source material, I guess. It doesn't really explain what it is.
Well, source materials, I looked at his death certificate. I looked at the police report, the autopsy report, his suicide notes. And I looked at these documents surrounding his death because I've been trying to write about Mike. He's been dead for 25 years now. I've been trying to write about him for about 20 years. And every book and every essay I wrote just didn't get to where I wanted to go. And finally, one of my therapists had said, why don't you start looking at documents to get the facts of his death first? So that's what I did. So by looking at the facts, grounding myself in those facts, it allowed me to explore the emotional depth of grief.
So the facts were not clear to you over a period of time?
That's right. I made assumptions because I didn't know that there was a police report when someone committed suicide and had no idea. So it allowed me to clearly understand what happened to him. I knew where he had died. I didn't know how he died. I didn't know the poison he had taken. I didn't know where he ended up. I didn't know that. I certainly didn't know anything about the autopsy, about what had happened when he took that poison. So there's a lot of gaps in the story that I had to find out before I could sort of piece together what had happened.
Were there some incidences that you didn't want to know about?
That's a good question. When he died, my brother wrote a suicide note, which is very rare. Most people who commit suicide do not leave notes behind. And people may not know this, and you may not know this, but if you look at the very first part of my book, there is a document there. And that document is my brother's suicide note that I reproduce in the book. And at the end of that suicide note, it becomes gibberish. And he doesn't sign the notes, because he was writing that note as he was dying. He had ingested the poison and then sat down to write that note. That confused me because I wanted to know, I don't know, did he have second thoughts? When he got to that point of no return, did he want to write down his last moments because he had second thoughts? I don't know.
Oh.
You know, that reminded me, as I was reading your book last night, I remember being struck by how you begin this book as it's really tough. It's a letter to your family. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that letter that you're reading, that's what I'm referring to. That's not my writing.
Oh, that's your
brother's. That's my brother's suicide note.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry.
That's quite right. I didn't realize that people would not. You don't really understand that is until you get deep into the book and I reference it. No, that's my brother's suicide note that I reproduce. And I have to say, I had to think long and hard about reproducing that note, about the ethics of it, about the about why I wanted to do it. But I think reading it, people can see how complicated my brother was, because in that note he says that, you know, he would like to be like my father. He thinks God is all that matters. He wants to be back in Indianapolis and have children and like my other brothers. Well, my brother Mike that I knew and that I had many conversations with wanted none of those things. He was an atheist. He never wanted to go back home. He didn't want children. He was, you know, living fully a gay life. So that last minute writing down it, It angered me when I read it, because we were two gay brothers, and what he's saying in this note is he doesn't want to be gay. He hated being gay, which was difficult for me to take. But he also reaffirmed what my father believed. That is, that the only good life is a life where you're living back home in Indianapolis with children. So what did that say about the life that I'm living? So his suicide note was, still is. It makes me angry.
It's very controversial to produce and show or a suicide note. It's something that we're not supposed to do, and I've run into that myself. But it's nobody else's business but yours, and I'm glad that you did that. And I'm just wondering, how has this affected your dad, or did it affect your dad?
The writing of the book or the suicide itself?
Just the suicide itself.
Well, that's a very good question. I write in this book, when my mother and father and I went to the morgue to identify my brother Mike's body, my father knew that I was gay by then, and he had made a point while we were waiting in the waiting room to come up to me, point a finger at me, and say, anyone who lives this kind of lifestyle deserves to die this way. So he placed a curse upon me, and he placed a curse upon my brother Mike. His view has not really changed in all these years, although we are trying to come back to a kind of relationship. My father's still alive, although he's very ill. He's 89 years old. He's been living with COPD for the last 10 years. And in fact, the book I'm currently working on, which is called My Father's Body, is an attempt to reconcile those parts of my father that live in me. I happen to look like my father. I have his body. I look in the mirror and I see him. I have some of his traits. And the point is trying to accept those parts of him in me in order to reconcile with him, even if he has no interest in reconciling with me.
You know, as children, we always try and be a little bit better than our parents. And I think that sounds like a really good book coming out. Are you, what do you see of yourself in your dad, and what are you better at than your dad?
Well, no one's ever asked me that question. That's an excellent question. I think that what I do appreciate, my father and my mother too, my father left me with a very strong sense of morals and ethics. I appreciate that, because especially in this world, you run into a lot of unethical, immoral people. And I have a very strong sense of ethics and morals. I'm better at my father, and this is kind of what made me different as a child. I'm extremely empathetic. That kind of separated me from my brothers when I was small. My father is not an empathetic person. So I think that's what he gave me, and that's kind of what is different between us.
Did your family talk after Mike's suicide?
No. They never talked about suicide. They never really talk about Mike anymore. He's sort of gone in their collective, except for my mother, I should say. My mother certainly talks to him, and I talk with my mother about him, but we don't mention the word suicide. And I have to say, one of the reasons I wrote this book is because we don't talk about suicide in this country, and suicide is an epidemic. And we have to start talking about it in order to start preventing people from taking their own lives. But my family never talks about it.
Before Mike died by suicide, that's something that you had struggled with in your life as well.
Absolutely. I had several suicide attempts and checked myself into hospitals in my teens and my 20s. So absolutely. And one of the stories I tell in the book is, again, tells you something about my brother Mike. The last time I talked with him, he knew that I had suicide attempts in my past. The last time I talked to him, he played a silly game with me, which we used to always play, called What If? And his question for me that last time is, if you're going to kill yourself, how would you do it? And I told him, and that's the way he did it. I don't bear a lot of guilt. I mean, I've had to go many years to figure this out. I know now that he was planning his suicide long before he had that conversation with me. So, again, he was setting me up to carry guilt the same way he did with his suicide note. That was my brother. He could be very mean. He could be very cruel. Although I loved him, I still love him, and I miss him a great deal.
You know that all of this is so complicated, but as you talk about, usually people remember the people who have died with only positive things. And I was so struck right. by kind of the cruelty of how he outed not just himself, but you to the entire family.
Yeah, that story is an interesting story where he, we had been out already and we had promised each other that we would not tell our family. But Mike went ahead and wrote a note. I wrote a letter, didn't tell me he was writing it, sent it to all of my family, and at the end put, P.S. Andy is too. And then he went on vacation. So when my family got it, the letter, they all called me. So I had to deal with all that emotional baggage. One thing I wanted to do with this book is we do tend to glorify those people who have committed suicide, and it's such a danger to do so, because then it glorifies the act of suicide as well. And what I'm and suicide is a very violent act, and it also leaves really deep emotional scars in those who had to suffer through someone who has committed suicide. So my intention in this book was to show Mike as the flawed individual that he was.
So, A.W., I know about those scars, but I want to ask you, has Mike's death helped you stay alive?
Absolutely. And absolutely it has. And writing this book has done the same, because I understand a couple of things. You don't come back from suicide. It is a decision that you cannot come back from. And by committing suicide, Mike was 33 when he committed suicide. He lost out on a lot of unexpected wonder that can happen in this life, an unexpected wonder that I have experienced in the 30 years or the 25 years since he died. But writing this book also allowed me to corral Mike and place him in my memory where he lives, and not to allow him to have any say in how I live my life today.
That's A.W. Barnes. The book is called The Dark Eclipse. You can find more information at his website. It's drawbarnes.com. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate the conversation today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.